This is CoPoint.
The following program contains explicit language.
It's the Murdoch Jones Show, murdochjones.com. It is brought to you by CoPoint. You can find them int.kopo.com. That's how the fantastic company that gets us on iTunes or Stitcher. You can also check them out on murdochjones.com or follow me at MurdochJ. With me tonight, the guest in the first two episodes, Kevin Morgan, my old radio cohort.
Hi.
You can find him on Facebook, facebook.com/xrockrocks. And our first phone guest.
Right.
This man, I'm telling you, remember this name, because coming up, you're gonna hear it, you're gonna see it, you're gonna hear the term Swabian, Iowa Swabian Hall, Mr. Carl Blake on the Murdoch Jones Show. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Carl is a what? How do you introduce yourself when people run into you at a bar and they go, or wherever, and they go, "What do you do?" You just say pig farmer?
Well, no, man, it never happens like that. Like I walked into Walmart and some big old fat lady was running by and she's like, "You're the pig guy."
Already recognizable.
Yeah, I guess that's me, because like I can't tell if like 12-year-old kid says, "I saw you on TV," and he's pointing at me, you know, and then eventually they ask me for my autograph or something, and I give out like 7 autographs now, and
you're on your way. I'm gonna set up your backstory a little bit. Carl runs a company called Rustic Rooster Farms. This week you were on Bizarre Foods with Andrew Zimmern.
Nope, it's actually Zimmern, Z-I-M-M-E-R-N.
Zimmern, sorry. And ever since then, Carl has been in the New York Times. He's signed up to do a bunch of national TV. Production companies are calling him. They want to make him a reality star. The man has reintroduced the heritage pig into the American diet, and he's going to be famous for it. I just know it. And so... So far, what are we, a week into your celebrity, I guess?
Well, I was thinking about 9 whole minutes, and I got about 6 more minutes of fame coming up with the Colbert Report on the 27th of March.
Okay, so this will come out before the Colbert Report. We're talking to a guy who is going to be on the Colbert Report. And so what do you know what is it going to be about? Are you bringing a pig?
They actually called me. Like, this is really bizarre, man, but when I came out of the New York Times on Friday last week, they actually, it was like 12 minutes after it showed up and published on the New York Times, I get a phone call from the Discovery Channel, and they wanted to make a movie, and they want to make a television series. And like 21 minutes later, I get a phone call from the Colbert Report, and this lady says, "My name is blah, 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 and I'm from the Colbert Report, and I wanted to talk to you. Do you know about the Colbert Report?" And I said, "Look, lady, I'm sorry, but I think you're full of shit." and she goes, "No, really, really, I'm not." I said, "Oh, bullshit." I said, "Jamie or John or one of my asshole friends put you up to this." And she goes, "No, really, I'm from the Colbert Report." And I said, "Man, I said, this is too funny. Who the hell would call me from the Colbert Report?" And I said, "Nah, that's not right." And she goes, "No, you're calling this number." And I said, okay. So I call this number, and this dude answers Colbert Report. "Can I help you?" And I'm like, "Oh, crap." So I call her back, and I apologize and said, "I'm sorry. I get these jokes played on me all the time." And I said, "You got to be shitting me. The Stephen Colbert Report?" She goes, "Yeah." And I said, "You want me on the show?" She says, "Yeah, we want you on the show. And can you bring a pig?" And I'm flying to New York City with a fucking pig. So, and you know what? She says, "Yes." And I said, I don't know. I said, "I don't have enough money. I ain't got the money to get there, you know." And she goes, no, we pay for everything. We'll fly you out there. We'll get you an airplane ticket, and we'll fly the pig, and we'll put you up in a big hotel, and and you get to have dinner with Steven, and you get to, you know, we'll limo you right out to the airport. And I said, well, hell, that sounds like a great idea. I guess we could do that. And she said, well, it's going to be fun.
Do they get a room for the pig?
That's what she said.
Where in the fuck did they put a pig in a New York City hotel room?
I don't know, but my pig is, he's not even potty trained, so just shit all over everything anyway.
Okay, so let's start in the beginning. When did you wake up one morning and go, I'm going to make a new pig?
Well, it was kind of one of these deals where it kind of evolved. It slowly evolved. What I did was, I was a computer engineer for Apple. I mean, for Apple, I had my own Apple dealership at one time, I was a computer guy. I mean, I've been that way since I was like in seventh grade. I mean, I was I had this gift for computers, and it started drying up. The computer stuff started drying up. Well, one by customer at a time. And in 2007, I actually was in a vehicle and I fell asleep for a moment and went into the ditch and I hit a culvert at 60 miles an hour. I broke my neck, the three most important bones in my neck, in three bones in five places.
Jesus.
And I broke my leg in half. I sat on the dome light for almost an hour, which burned a big old hole in my leg. And my underwear modeling days were over. and that was, I was really concerned to me. And they shaved my head off. They shaved my head to put this halo thing on. And of course, I was paralyzed, couldn't move or anything, and because I broke my neck, and I got it snapped back into place enough so that I could walk and talk. But the accident nearly killed me, and when I got done, I needed physical therapy because I couldn't walk or talk and do things quite right anymore. So I wanted to go back to the farm, and just prior to this accident, I had moved out to the farm. But I didn't have any pigs yet or anything like that, and I didn't even have the garden ready to go.
And for those of you listening, Carl is from middle of Iowa.
Right. This was right in Denver, Iowa, is where this happened. I needed physical therapy, and I'm like $1,500 a week. I said, I ain't got that kind of money. I said, I'll go live on the farm. So when I got to the farm, I was planting tomato plants with a crutch. I poke a hole in the ground, and my right leg had a cast, and my right arm wouldn't lift up or down. All I could do was pick something up off the table. And then I'd throw the tomato plant in the hole where I did it and use my foot on the crutch and cover it up with dirt. So I was planting all of these, thousands of tomato plants and beans and everything else as my physical therapy. And at the end of time, I thought, well, I really would like to get back into pigs and stuff because then I'm lifting 5-gallon pails of feed, and what better way to build your arm strength up than to do that every day?
Sure.
5-gallon pails of water and, 50-pound bags of seed. I mean, that's better than the 10-pound stuff they wanted me to use at the hospital. So I was reading one day about this guy, and his name was Heath Putnam, and he brought these mangaliches into the United States. And I was thinking, for a number of years, every year that I cook out, and I'm an avid grilling kind of guy, and I noticed that the pork, you couldn't even grill a pork chop in its own fat. There was nothing, man. Drying a popcorn fart. I mean, this stuff is in the brats are so terrible that you can't eat them when they're dry and they stick in your throat. And I'm going, man, this ain't the way it's supposed to be. So I got to thinking, this guy brought in these pigs from out of the country, and I'm like, that's a good idea. I mean, because our bloodlines and everything here suck, and then we don't have enough pigs. Heritage pigs to support people. So what do we do? And he brought them in from Austria. And I called him up one day, and I called the guy up. I said, I read about a story in the New York Times, and I said, does this pig really taste that good? And he goes, it tasted better than that. It's the best pig I ever ate in my life. And I said, are you crazy? And he goes, no. And I said, all right, I just needed to know, because you spent $500,000, 2 years of quarantines, and you started off with 29 pigs, and now you got 87. I said, I think only a crazy man would do something like that, unless it was really, really, really good. He goes, no, I think it's really, it was the best thing I ever eaten, so I brought him here. And he said, they're the number one pig in Europe. And I said, yeah, all right, I'll take your word for it. Yeah, how would I
know? So are bikini shorts.
Exactly. How would I know what take us number one in Europe. I mean, I wasn't really into that, but the cool thing was is that when I asked him about, hey, you got any breed stock? He's like, nope, I'm not selling any. And I said, well, okay, be that way. I thought I'd help you out by raising pigs for you. And he's like, nope, I'm doing it on my own. I said, whatever. And then I got to thinking, you know, if you had the number one pig in Europe and he brings it, drags it over here and he butchers it and starts selling it, developing markets for it, and these people want this pig so bad, it's so good, he's getting upwards of $20 a pound. All I can say is that in a market like that, and he's number one, and there ain't now number two, three, four, or five, and I'm thinking, hell, I'll be glad to be number five or six in $1 million market.
Sure, that's right. That's a good thought. I have a question for you, Carl. What's, you know, define, because I, you know, haven't been around the farm for a while, define heritage pig. What's that mean?
A heritage pig has a bloodline of 150 years or more. After they brought the traditional pigs here, they started bringing, after the United States was settled, they started bringing in other pigs, and that's where you get all these Shire pigs, like a Hampshire, a Berkshire. They all come from the Shires of England. And those pigs all were imported into the United States. It's the same with the Duroc and all these other pigs. But once they were here, and they were here for more than 150 years, then that's considered a heritage pig. All the other pigs that are out there, like the confinement pigs, those aren't heritage pigs. Those are genetically modified, and those are two or three bloodlines of pigs that have been developed for special things. And those pigs were actually designed to be able to eat the chemicals and all the other crap that they feed them to make them grow faster, big, and muscular. There's all these accelerated things and all these things going on with these pigs, but with the confinement pigs, but they're not 150 years. A heritage pig is like a mule foot. That's a pig that has a foot like a mule. The Ossabaugh from the Island of Ossabaugh. You've got the Saddleback from England. You need to understand the Chinese had the Meishan pig for over 2,000 years. That pig was their means of oil and grease. They used the lard. So many things beyond just the meat. And Meishan only has 18% meat and 82% fat. 18% meat on a 300-pound pig only gives you like 36 pounds of meat. That's nothing for a 300-pound pig. But they needed the oil, the grease, the lard. And people, up until 1968, that's where the means of lard in their cooking and their pastries and everything came from the lard of the pig. In 1968, all of a sudden Americans said, wow, if you eat fat, you're going to get fat. So they said, we have to eliminate all the fat in the pigs. So that was this strange tangent to go off and take the Duroc pig and these other pigs and crossbreed them into these pigs that had no fat on them. And they're the precursors of today's white meat. And there ain't been a goddamn pig in the whole world that was ever had that ever had white meat. The white meat thing just pisses me off beyond all belief.
Okay,
because I don't want my damn pig to be like a chicken.
Right.
So it's 2007?
Yeah.
And so you get a Meishan pig.
I did a bunch of research. I spent hours and hours and hours researching the internet. I discovered that the Mangalitsa wasn't truly the number one pig in Europe. The number one pig in Europe, besides the Iberico, was the Swabian Hall from Germany. Schwäbisch Holstein, and that's what they called it. This was this pig from Swabian Hall, Germany, and King Wilhelm of Germany said, hey, in 1821, our pigs are too dry, too lean, too muscle-bound. Same thing that we said today. I'm like, hey, that's right, man. The dude's like, I mean, he's right on. And I'm thinking, but it's, you know, 1821. It's a whole bunch of years back, but hey, you know, he said a contingency of people to China because he heard about this fatty pig. They brought the Meishan back to Germany, and they bred it to the Russian wild boar. Now, subsequently, that crossbreed pig has gone on to win several world fairs since the period of time in 1821.
How did you find out about, is there a encyclopedia of pigs that you found and read about the history, or how did you find this Swabian Hall pig?
He went to Wikipedia.
Well, kind of like that, there's this thing in Oklahoma State that has a little blurb. I mean, it's really cheesy web page, and it looks like some flunky from, you know, who got pissed off in computer class, but it's like the Bible of pigs. and it talks about Oklahoma State, and it has all these pigs in there and talks about their characteristics. Made a point to tell everybody or try to make it out that, see, he was kind of pissed off because I actually went and made these pigs. He told me to, you know, to compete against his, and he thought it wouldn't happen. He was laughing at me because he thought I was just some dumbass who wanted to raise pigs.
I think that your first, like, okay, because, and I'll be blunt here, you know, you're big 6'2 dude, you're, you know, wearing overalls with, you know, only one strap, and you're a big dude, and you're in the middle of Iowa, and you sound like you sound, the most people who meet you on the street without digging into your, you know, background and your drive and your will would probably go, oh, that dumbass from Iowa, he's not going to, you know, he doesn't have any drive.
No. It didn't happen like that because I was a computer engineer and I wore a suit and tie every day. It wasn't until later on that the strap came down on my bibs because I was taught by a boar that I had to put my strap down. That was way longer after, you know, that was like a year and a half into actually the pigs before I started wearing my bibs with the strap down, and that was a safety issue. It had nothing to do with being just a dumbass with a strap down.
What? How does that help or save you, the strap down?
Here, all right.
Okay.
So I'm gonna give it to you straight right here, right now.
Fashion safety advice with Swabian Hall pig farmer Carl Blake.
Well, the deal is, it's not a fashion thing. It is strictly a safety issue. When I got in my accident, my right leg was made a little bit longer than my left. Apparently, they couldn't measure or something. I don't know. But my right leg measured
twice, cut once.
There you go. And they didn't. So they did not follow that advice because my right leg is longer than my left leg. So, and since I'm tall, and I get if I buy the bibs, they'll be 3 inches too short at the bottom. And if I let the things down, then the straps are all the way adjusted down. Well, the problem is, well, I don't know why, but my left side, because my right side is taller, my left side, the strap would fall down around my shoulder, around the elbow. You know, it was just annoying all the time, and I always constantly was flicking and putting it back on my shoulder, and I tried to adjust it any way I could, and I couldn't get it to stay up. So it would always fall down. Well, I just got to where I let it fall down, and I'd wear it that way a while, and then I'd kind of put it back up on my shoulder. Well, one day I was in the boar pen, I was in there with Atlas, and Atlas was a 450-pound Russian wild boar with 4-inch tusks. And you never turn your back on a pig. I don't even care what kind of pig it is. You never turn your back on it. You never turn your back on a Russian wild boar, ever, for any reason, unless you're out of the pen. And I never turned my back on him, but I turned just enough so that he thought he had an in on me. And that dude came across that pen, and he was trying to get me, and I turned just enough to see him, and I made 3 or 4 steps trying to grab the ladder so I could get out of the pen, and that damn strap fell down over my left elbow, and when I went to reach up and grab the next rung above me, I couldn't do it, and because my arm was held down by that damn strap. Well, the strap held my arm down, so I'm a kind of a strong guy. I ripped my damn strap off, ripped my shorts in half as I'm trying to climb up this ladder, and I couldn't get a hold of that rung, so I had to turn around and jump on the pig. So now I had to fight the damn pig in the pen. And half my pants are falling off now because I broke the strap, and I was bleeding because my hand was stuck on a nail on the ladder, so I ripped a big hole in my hand, and I turned around and I had to fight this pig in the pen. And I didn't have nobody there with me. I was all alone, and all I could think of is,
you're going to die.
He's going to eat my damn cell phone, and I'm not going to be able to call out. All they're going to do is find the, you know, my boots in here. And
a pair of overalls, ripped.
Yeah, but thank goodness, you know, I was, you know, I'm not a small man. I landed on that pig, and I flattened him to the ground, and then he didn't like that too much. We rolled around a little bit, and then I jumped up and calmly walked to the ladder, and then I climbed out because I had to let him know I was in charge, and I was, and he didn't scare me.
This could have been the greatest YouTube video ever.
Yeah, I walked calmly to the ladder, climbed out, got on the other side, and then I hit the ground, and I was breathing so hard I couldn't see straight, and I was bleeding, and from that day forward, I've never wore that strap up ever, and I won't again either. So it was a safety issue, and I don't care. You know, people were laughing at me, but laughed at me. I'm 6'2", 300 and some pounds, and it don't matter to me.
Okay, so getting back to you, so you find the Mishan, and you breed this with this Russian boar, Atlas.
Well, yep. I thought, well, hey, this the number one pig in Europe is considered the Swabian Hall. Hey, except for the Iberico from Spain. I knew I wasn't going to get that pig, but I read some more about the Swabian Hall, and it turns out that they had bred these pigs together. Well, I thought, yeah, I found it, and the success. And then I started doing research, and I discovered that there were no Mishan in the whole United States. and I had to go to China to get them, and I'm like, oh, no, well, I'm screwed. So I gave up on the idea. About a month later, one of my friends calls me and says, hey, because there's a pig called the Mishan or something like that over at Iowa State. You need to give them a call. So I called Iowa State, and they said, I said, do you speak Mishan? And they go, you bet. We got all kinds of Mishan. I said, no way. And I said, how many? And they said, how many you want? And I said, I'll take two boars and two sows. He goes, yeah, I'll deliver to you tomorrow at 1:00. Well, he delivered them there at 12:30 and let the pigs put them in the barn for me, and they were breeding when I got home.
Nice.
And I said, wow, that is cool. And then I thought, well, I got these ugly ass pigs. Now what do I do? And then. So I said, well, I need to get some Russians. Well, then I discovered that not only did they not want the Russians in the United States, they're trying to outlaw them, they're trying to kill them. But when I tried to bring somebody to the state of Iowa, all of a sudden I had the sheriff and the DNR and all these people, state vets, show up at my house wanting to, you know, telling me that, you can't have that pig. And I said, why the hell can I? And they said, well, according to the law here, you gotta have blah, 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 all this other crap. And I go, no, you guys don't have it right. And he said, what do you mean? I said, when you photocopied the law, you didn't photocopy the last paragraph. And they go, what's that? And I said, well, here, I have the code of Iowa in my car. And I walked over, pulled the code of Iowa out, and showed it to him, and I said, see, you didn't photocopy the last paragraph, which says, exempt. Farmers that are raising the pig for food and fiber are exempt. I said, see, that's me, guys. I'm exempt.
What's the problem with that pig? Why did they have such a problem with it that they showed up?
The pork producers across the country and all the people in the pork industry, they don't want the Russians out there. They keep saying it's feral pigs, and that's Russians that are causing the problem. It's not Russians that are causing problems in some of these states. It's the actual pigs that have been let out, these pig pigs, these nasty pigs, confinement pigs, that have been let out that became feral and then start breeding with other things out in the woods.
How big a problem is it really? I mean, is it blown up by television? Because there was I was watching all those shows where they're just shooting, grabbing the pigs. Is it really as big a problem as they're making it out to be?
No, it's completely contrived. What you have to understand is these people have trumped this up. I mean, in Michigan, they made it out like it was this big, horrendous problem, and they had to go through the legislature. And they had to go ahead and outlaw the Russian wild boar, and they didn't want the hunting facilities to have them. And they said that, that they went into the state office and said that they'd have so many problems in these counties with the pigs. And when we actually did the research, found out that they were lying through their teeth. There wasn't one county with one report of one pig anywhere. But they put these numbers out there and freak everybody out and say, oh, they're destroying all this and they're destroying all that. And I'm sorry, but it's not true.
This is the commercial producer. This is the man, basically.
Well, they want that pig gone because it's got vigor. It's got bloodline. You know, there's tremendous amount of genetics in there, and they just want it gone. They say that, I mean, if they have a confinement facility, why are they worried about our pigs now? Because the pig can't get in a confinement building.
Do they want it gone because of its superiority as far as food goes?
Correct.
Okay.
They don't want that. They've eliminated nearly every single bloodline of pigs in the United States. When you say, in the beginning, you said, hey, we've introduced heritage pigs to people. Well, the one thing I thought 5 years ago, when Krishan 555 came out and they were talking about heritage pigs and how good they were and how everybody should be eating heritage pigs, at that time I thought it was a great thing. However, what happened was, after 3 years of this, going around different big cities showing how important Harry's pigs were, how good they taste, the market inhaled. So rather than just sell all the stock that they had for food, all of a sudden they're selling their breed stock too as meat. So they lost the sow. So now you don't have enough production for all these people in the United States to want the pig. So unless we develop a pig that's hyper-productive, has red meat, has a little bit of fat to it, and comes from Verity's lines, if we do not develop a pig like that, we're going to be relegated to no breed stock left of any heritage pigs in the United States in the next 2 to 5 years.
You're like one of the farmers who has that one piece of grain that doesn't have any other DNA from another piece of grain in it. You're fighting Pig Santo, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
My pig has European bloodlines in it because it came from China and Russia. And there's nothing like, nobody's ever had nothing like that in the last 30 years. And not everybody can just go out and get a Russian wild boar to eat. It just doesn't happen, and they killed most of them. So my pig is actually new and interesting to everybody because it has dark red meat instead of white meat.
How's their attitude versus the Russian sow? I mean, is it more docile or is it more aggressive?
Well, you know what's so cool about it? The Meerschaum pig is like a big, giant St. Bernard dog. They just kind of lay there. And they can never get more than 15 feet away from food or water. And they look like dinosaurs or big rhinos when they go and lay down on the ground. And it's like you can't tell one end from the other because of all the fat. and the cool thing is, I have kids that go out and sit on the Meerschaum when they're walking. And the Meerschaum doesn't stop them and turn around, just keeps walking the same direction with a kid on his back. But the Russian is so mean, they look you in the eye. I mean, I've never seen an animal like that, and it scares the shit out of me because they look you directly in the eye, and they hate humans, and they will kill you, and they will eat you. So what I was so happy about was when we had the little litters, these litters of pigs turned out to be the exact mating of the two, which means that we took the laziness, yeah, it was there. We took the meanness, yeah, it was there, but it was only like half there. And which was cool because it was the perfect amount of vigor that we wanted in our pigs. We call that, in the Russian pigs, we call that vigor. And that vigor leads to, like, breeding. For instance, you can put a Russian boar in with 10 sows that are in heat, and before you get the gate shut, it'll have three of them bred.
My kind of boar right there.
And Duroc...
Hard not to like him.
Right.
Exactly.
So a Duroc hog is like today's hippie vegan. They'd rather just talk about their feelings and write some poetry. And the Russian boar is like an MMA fighter. He gets in there and balls deep, get the job done.
That's exactly... I couldn't say it better, but you're right.
Okay, here's a question for you, and I don't know if you really want to speak on this, since you're dealing with Pig Santo. How many, are you the only one that has the what's the smaller, the one that looks like the Sharpei, that pig?
The Meerschaum.
The Meerschaum. Are you the only one in the United States with the Meerschaum anymore? Or how many, like, for instance, how many Meerschaum do you have and how many of the other brand? The Russian boar. Yeah.
Well, I can't, I won't say specific numbers.
Okay, good. That's fine. Yeah.
And it gets even, listen to this shit. Uh-huh. And Carl, you have to correct me if I'm wrong. He keeps all of his hogs in an undisclosed location.
Good.
On an Amish farm Iowa.
I have total respect for that. That's awesome.
People were killing my pigs.
Oh, that's bullshit.
Them with disease. Some people stole them. I said, I'm done with that. And I put the pigs on an Amish farm so they'd be safe, and the breed stock would be safe from everybody.
Can you trust the Amish? You got a good relationship with these dudes?
Well, I believe so. I mean, I've been able to work with them very well, and we've done a very good job of working with them. So I got to think so. They've been very good people. We've been working with them for a while. And
the nice thing about the Amish is what they can't watch you on Colbert Report and then steal all your hogs.
but they don't even talk to the outside world or anything, and they don't let people know. You know, so I don't have to worry about them, you know, letting people know where they're at and stuff. So.
How did you hook up with the Amish farm?
Well, I started selling turkeys and stuff, and I met this Amish family that was raising turkeys and selling them, and they did such a good job, and I became close friends with them, and I worked with them all the time, and then I started selling some of their products for them, and then I went ahead and I asked him, I said, you know, if you don't have any pigs at this particular side of the farm, would you like to take care of some of mine? And I said, I'd really like you to help me with it. I said, I can make you some more money. If you take care of these pigs and help me generate the breed stock out of them, I said, I'd be glad to pay you for that. So they said, yeah, we do it. And I said, the biggest thing is, I said, understand that the Swabian Hall of Germany was actually raised by the Amish for many, many years.
Well, so they're like old friends.
Exactly. So it falls back into their breed line. And actually, most of the Germans that are here from Amish land, basically, are very familiar with the Swabian Hall because that's what their grandpas and grandmas and all those people used to eat. So they really were interested in bringing it into their family and bringing it here into the United States.
Let's go, if we can, let's go back to, how did Andrew Zimmern find you?
So what happened was, Andrew Zimmern, 2 years ago, Andrew Zimmern's show called me and said, hey, we got to talk to you. And I said, what? They said, well, we've asked all these chefs from around the Midwest about iconic foods, and they all keep talking about this Blake guy raising this pig. So they said after like the ninth one, they said that it was about time they called Carl and find out what the hell's going on. So the Zimmer show called me and said, hey, can you tell us what's going on with this pig and why they keep telling us about you? And I explained to them what we were doing, and they went, wow, that is interesting. And they said, hey, well, we want to do a show. And I said, great. So I told all my friends that the Andrew Zimmer show, we were going to be on there, and I was feeling like a big shot, and, you know, it was really kind of cool, you know, we were going to be on TV, and then the Andrew Zimmer show never called back anymore, and all my friends.
You probably
were
felt
like
a giant asshole then.
Oh, yeah, all my friends are going, yeah, you're beating up full of shit, you know, and you got away with that for a while, and, you know, and I'm sort of like, well, I looked like a total dipshit. So I left it alone and didn't say anything, and then last March, they called and said, hey, we really want to do a show. And I said, yeah, and I heard this BS before. No, we really want to do the show. So I didn't say anything to anybody this time. I didn't say a word. And they said, well, you know, you want to do the show, and then we'll be there filming 2 weeks. 2 weeks worth of total craziness, getting everything done. And then they show up, and they said, the cool thing was is that these guys came on my property on a Sunday, and they were walking around, and I knew what they were thinking when they saw this, you know, 1881 farm, you know, barns falling down and everything else, looked like Green Acres. They were expecting, when they said, well, you're going to roast a pig for us, I said, yeah. They said, I knew they were thinking I was going to roast this pig and this old nasty-looking barbecue thing that I had there, and you know, they were going to see some, you know, down-home dipshit pig farmer who makes the pig thing. So I called them in and I said, hey boys, I said, this is the Andrew Zimmer show. They're gonna make me look stupid. I said, I want to change that. Can you come out and we'll do a porchetta and we'll roast it and smoke it? And they said, yeah, let's go. So the guys hopped in their vehicles and they come out there that the day before, 8 o'clock at night, and we took the pigs and I had them ready to go. And basically, we take a whole pig, head on, skin on, feet and everything. We slice it, we take all the bones out of it, and which is quite a job. And then we fill it up, the guts and everything, we fill up with like sausage and a loin or two and hearts and liver and kidney and all the other organs. And we slap that in there. Then we sew it up, and then we truss it. And then we go ahead and slap that into a smoker, and we cook it for 16 hours. So we did that, then by 11 o'clock we had the pig ready, and that's when Andrew got there, and Andrew came in, and they wanted to see the pig, and we showed them, and then we made another one on the air. So we ended up cooking 8 pigs for this event. And so we cooked that pig for him and got it on the, they got all the film and everything they wanted, and it was really cool. So that was in June of last year, and they were going to air it in December 10th of last year, but they said that the show was the funniest thing they'd seen in the last 2 years. The network didn't want it to air until it was the premiere of the Andrew Zimmern show in February. So now we got moved from December 10th to February 25th. And what they didn't know was 5 or 6 weeks prior to that, or prior to the being released, I was actually doing an interview with the New York Times. The New York Times came down to the Amish place, and they were interviewing me. As they were interviewing me, I get a phone call from the production house for Andrew Zimmer, and they asked me if we wanted to do a television series while I'm being interviewed by the New York Times. You know, I've had tons of calls from other places that want an interview. I told him, I said, hey, I got all these places calling me. He says, I'll get it published now. So he called his editor, and the editor said it'll be published Thursday. Well, they actually got it published Friday afternoon on the web, and then it was published Thursday afternoon, and then Friday is when it was published actually in the actual real paper. And all hell broke loose on Thursday. I mean, it was nuts for me.
Okay, so let's go to that Thursday. Thursday, you come out in the New York Times. So, who starts calling? Discovery Channel?
12 minutes after I've been on the air, or after they've been released, I get a call from the Discovery Channel wanting to do a television series, and I said, "Well, I don't think I can." I said, and we did a sizzle reel, and they got that ready to go, and they were showing networks a sizzle reel starting Thursday and Friday last week, and on Monday they showed it to Discovery Channel, they showed it to National Geographic, and last Friday was the A&E people with the Duck Dynasty people. And they all have this vision that, you know, that we're the next Duck Dynasty. And so everybody's now, you know, bidding against it. They're going crazy. And
how do you prepare yourself for what seems like upcoming fame? Like, you still, because while this is all going on, you still have, you know, pigs to feed. You still gotta, you know, you wake up and you know, it's still in Iowa, and it's not like, you know, bales of liquid cash is just rolling into the door when all of this is happening. So how do you get ready for that?
Well, actually, I got ready for it by working on my website, trying to get it ready to go. So I don't even, it just got crazy. And I was trying to prepare myself. That's like rich people, you know, I figure they put their pants on the same way I do. They just may have a little bit better cloth when they put them on.
Sure, and they button up both straps on the...
And they may utilize all the parts of the clothing. Where
right.
I don't...
Those silly bastards, they don't know.
They've never been in a pen with a boar. How the fuck are they supposed to know?
That's right, absolutely. That's kind of where it's at. I don't know about the fame, you know. I mean, if we get a television series, I think that's going to be a whole different ballgame. That's going to be scary.
That's when you're going to find out where your friends are, because you know now everything there's this
I know where my friends are now. Don't worry about that.
Obviously you do, but like there's this great Chappelle Show skit on the end of the third season, and they had taped it before he had walked away from the $50 million, and the entire skit consisted of this. Like, he goes to the barbershop, and on the sign on the wall it says haircut $8, but they know it's Dave Chappelle, and so they go, oh, haircuts now $20,000. Like, oh, you would have said it's $8 on the wall. And they're like, oh, that's the old price.
Now, I have to tell you, that's exactly what happened. And all of a sudden, I find out who my friends, these people are coming out of the woodwork now because they think I have money.
Right. Everyone wants to come and you know, mooch off the teat.
Women that I have hated for years, all of a sudden, find me interesting and attractive.
Oh, my God. I didn't even think of that. Yeah. Iowa pig farming wives must be throwing granny panties at you.
And you know what? Understand one thing. I am totally going to use that. Because before this, I couldn't get a date before, but now I can. But by God, I'm going to use it.
You could get on TV and become famous, and you could show up in the pig truck covered in shit, and they'll be like, you smell earthy. This is great.
That's exactly true. I believe that to be true with all my heart. I mean, it's just too funny, you know.
Awesome.
But you know what? I met a woman last weekend. I probably shouldn't say her name, but I met this woman. She's a big farmer in North Carolina, and she got on the tractor, and she come across the yard on the tractor with this pig cart, hydraulic pig cart on the back with pigs in it, and she got off that tractor, and I said, "My God, woman!" She says, "What?" I said, "You have no idea what a woman on a tractor does for me." And she's like, She's like, what? And I said, that's the sexiest thing I've ever seen. And then she goes over and we get in the back of the trailer and we're going to give 10 pigs a shot. And she goes in the back of the trailer and she talks to these fucking pigs. I mean, she was talking to these pigs. They didn't move. They didn't jump. They didn't do anything. And she just calmly walked up to them with a needle, stuck them in the neck, and injected them with their shot, and then calmly told each one to move away.
Mm-hmm. Sexy.
And I get out of the trailer, and I said to her, I said, that's the sexiest thing I've ever seen next to a woman on a tractor. I said, well, I can't believe this. I think I'm in love.
Carl.
This is just, this isn't right.
Because you know what you're picturing. You're picturing, in the four-post farm bed. She's caressing your ponytail a little bit right before she gives you a shot.
Did things go in slow motion and then you let the other suspender down?
For a guy who's in a car accident and probably should have died and, only parts of your body was working at one time, you've had a pretty interesting and really neat ride, man.
Yeah, it's been it's been a real serious roller coaster. You got to remember though, this ain't all been easy. I mean, there have been many times when I said I wanted to quit because I've never been a quitter, and I've been one of those guys like a pit bull. When I bite onto something, I hang on till I've really got it all run out. And just about the time I was going to quit. Now I was going to quit March of last year or 2 years ago when Andrew Zimmern called and said he wanted to be on the show, and I had quit the night before. I said, I'm done, and I was going to liquidate all the pigs. And I get a phone call at 8 o'clock in the morning from Andrew Zimmern saying they're going to be there to film in 2 weeks. And I thought, well, that's going to be cool. They're going to come here and film, and I quit. So I decided to keep going because I thought, God saved or whatever was making me do this. So, there was times when somebody poisoned my pigs, and I lost over 650 pigs, and there's all these dead pigs. My sows were having dead pigs right on the ground. These are perfectly healthy 2.6 to 3-pound pigs, and they're just squirting them out on the floor, and they're all dead. And all I could do was sit in the middle of the room and cry. I mean, they set me back 2 years, and, it's happened more than once where, the pigs have died from disease or other things. And all these guys have it, all the new pig guys have it easy. They got augers, and they got machinery, and they put all the feed in the bin, and they, push a button, and it feeds 1,000 pigs at once.
Bunch of pussies.
That's kind of the way I looked at it. but now we're trying to, I'm trying to get some of these things done too, and that's why.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. This was on the Bizarre Food Show. You feed your pigs with hydroponic barley?
Yeah, we sure do.
Listen, Kevin, listen to this. So do you have the hydroponic tanks, or how does this work?
Yeah, I have two hydroponic chambers here. They're 25 feet long by 12 feet tall by 14 feet wide.
You ever grow any, left-hand feed out of there?
The first thing they say is, they call it hippie hydroponics. they say, you're growing pot in there. The interesting thing is the cops were here 3 times to check in my tanks. They got a report that I was growing pot, and they came here and they told me that bullshit, and all they wanted to do was see what was inside. And I opened it up, and the one cop's eyes got big as dinner plates, like, wow, this like must be all the pot on the planet in here. And I said, whoa, Ginger. I said, you can't smoke this, but I'd like to see you try it. And the other guy goes, dude, it's barley. And the other cop's like, oh, okay. And they came twice during the week, and then they came once at 11 o'clock at night because they thought maybe I was switching them out at night.
Sure, you put the barley pot in there during the day, and then you put the old weed in at night.
Exactly, yep. That's what they were thinking. So they would come, and I said, you got a search warrant? No, but Carl, you know us. Let us in and see it. You got nothing to hide. But anyway, the hydroponics, really became cool because we could raise hydroponically grown feed for $95 a ton versus $600 a ton. So, I could save myself $500 every time I made feed. It's like, oh my God, what I've done is I've actually set up one of my chambers to be a human consumption chamber, and I've grown beans and lentils and adzukis and garbanzos and a radish, and I grow them right in the tray, and then you eat it like a salad. It is good. I'm not your three hugger frou-frou veggie kind of sprout kind of guy, but I got in there and I made this stuff and I tried it. I would go to hell if I didn't like it so much I wanted more. So I actually grow it in my house now.
Well, and now this is, we've had this, we've talked about this with other guests before. People, you know, they go to the store, they go to the meat aisle, they go to the frozen vegetable aisle, they go to the canned vegetable aisle, and they go home and they don't really think, what the fuck am I putting in my mouth? And if people knew the tonnage of awful shit that is even deemed healthy when it's sold to them in the store, you know, I think it would make them want to vomit, and everybody would want to grow, you know, Michonne pigs and hydroponic beans. And,
yeah, it seems like the FDA is kind of full of shit lately, doesn't it?
Well, that would be the USDA.
Yeah. All right, sorry.
And that's, well, no, the FDA too, but you take a can of green beans. When they've been boiled and put in this air and put in the can, I mean, when you can them at home, it's a different deal. You're not putting all these other preservatives and everything else in there. And really, when you get the fresh barley right off the tray, it has so many vitamins in it. And actually, when it starts to degrade, it actually starts degrading in 2 or 3 hours after it's been out of the water. And they start degrading, well, then you're losing all those valuable nutrients and vitamins. And when you give them this stuff, it's like superpower, you know? And you feed it to them right off the shelf, you can't get a better feed for your pigs than to use hydroponics.
The world you're talking to are people that they don't want any chemicals. They want 100% organic. They want it to mean 100% organic,
that
and not
true.
Just some
yeah.
marketing term.
Right.
You know, I'm telling you, man, I think you're sitting on a home run. And I don't think anyone will ever appreciate how what a struggle it was to get there. Almost quitting, all these pigs dying, you know, financially struggling through this thing for so many years before you could actually make it work.
And there's a lot to it. I mean, people don't realize that. But the fact is, what we've done is we've been able to prove that we could make a better pig.
You have a quote in your New York Times article, and I'm going to link the New York Times article, and when you get on when your Colbert episode tapes, and your link to Andrew Zimmern's show.
Zimmern.
I'll put all these links up on murdochjones.com, and you got to just learn more about Carl. Also, I'll put the Russell Grusser link on there too. But you've got a quote in your New York Times article. It says, I can build a motorcycle, I can fly a model airplane, I can throw somebody out of a bar, I can wrestle a pig, and I can program a computer. I'm a strange duck, that's for sure. And, you know, and well, it may be true, but I think what this country needs to get back to is that element of renaissance, where you can fly a model airplane, and you can grow a hog, and you can have a chicken coop, and you can program a computer, and you can pick out a nice wine, and you're a cool dude, man. Whatever you're doing, keep doing it.
No, I appreciate that a lot, but, you know, the thing that bothers me is that people have gotten away from doing the fun things, and that's why I say, you know, I'm a strange duck because I have these abilities from God. I mean, I'm 6'2" and I look like a just big dumbass football player. But you know what? When they say me sit down and start typing 140 words a minute on a computer, that's when they look at me and go, there's something strange about this dude. And then, you know, then I can walk out and get on my Harley or my Indian a bike I just built myself and take off down the road. You know, there's something to be said for being able to do your own stuff anymore. And not enough people are doing that. And I mean, hey, I'd rather be able to walk my own walk than to do somebody else's. You know.
Well, you're doing it. You're a cool dude, man. And I hope after you're completely hugely famous, we get to do this again and we get to talk about the progression from, you know, what was to what is.
There's no guarantees in this business, you know that, and the entertainment business is very fickle, and right now they think we're the next Duck Dynasty, and that would be really cool if we could go beyond that, but, you know, I don't know if you know, they may decide they don't really like us. And, you know, out of all these other places, hopefully they're doing some kind of bidding war or something. But if they, you know, somebody takes us, I hope that, you know, we can take that beyond. And, you know, what I'd really like to see is people out there get to see what confinement pigs are like and why they skin the pig and they throw the head away. People don't know why that's the case. I think that people should know about where their pigs and all their food is coming from, because if you don't, right now people are eating horse meat and they don't even know it.
Sure.
People are eating fish and they don't even know that the fish they're eating is not the fish that's been, they're being told it is.
They're being told it's a different fish.
Well, people want to know why their children are autistic, and people want to know why all of a sudden the child they had stares off into the sunset for 10 minutes and they don't know why. I mean, it's all these, it's aspartame that wasn't approved by the government for 30 years until there was a sugar shortage. It's these chemicals they're putting in everything that you eat and do, these processed breads and sugars and everything else. Look, the butter has like 48 ingredients. That's not butter. Butter has two ingredients, sweet cream and salt.
His name is Carl Blake. He operates Rustic Rooster Farms. Where can everyone find you? They can find you on Facebook. They can find you on Twitter.
Yeah, my website, my Facebook. I mean, I'm pretty approachable. I mean, my phone number's published. So, I mean, if you have questions and stuff, you know, I'm more than happy to help. And Rustic Rooster Farms is on Facebook, and then I have a personal page. But
and it's Rustic, R-U-S-T-I-K, Rustic Rooster Farms.
Yeah, I use a K instead of a C. It was like a means of obscurity through security, you know, security through obscurity, you know, and it made us a little harder to find, but the reality is it really hasn't mattered. They find us anyway.
Well, you're a cool dude, man. We appreciate the time, and everyone, eventually, I hope everybody eats some Iowa Swabian Hall pork.
And I appreciate you having me on your show. You know, I do appreciate this, and, you know, if there's anything I can do for you guys, let me know.
Shit, man, you're a good hang. That's all you needed to do. I appreciate it.
All right,
dude. It's Carl Blake. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you, sir.
We'll talk to you later.
Yep.
This is CoPoint.